Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the entertainment world. I view music as a very personal thing, and I must confess that my favorite music genre is prog rock. I fell in love with it in 1970, and the love affair continues. It is my great pleasure to welcome Ian Fortnum of the duo Sontag. Ian, welcome to the program.
Hello, Simon. Very glad to be here. Very pleased that you've given me a little bit of airtime.
Oh, I just love prog. What can I tell you? I've never met a prog rock song or writer that I didn't like. But before we get into the music, and incidentally, I do think your new CD is just fabulous.
This is superb to hear. I would be most upset if you did say that.
But let's start with a little about yourself. Who are you?
Me, I'm a kind of, I have this duality. I'm a two-headed beast in that I'm a Sontag musician under cover of darkness, but by day I haunt the streets as a music journalist.
Ooh, I'm scared already.
I'm a horrifying prospect on many levels.
Music journalist. This is music to my ears, shall I say. Who do you music journalist for?
Well, I'm Classic Rock Magazine. I'm reviews editor at Classic Rock Magazine, which is where I do most of my scribing, for want of a better word.
As I understand it, Sontag is a collaboration between you and Richard Sontag. How did it come about?
Oh, it came about in the very dim mists of time, going back to, I guess, where all prog rock is supposed to find its crucible, which is the 1970s, which we originally met when we were two schoolboys. And we'd always been very into music. We were a very lucky generation in that as children we grew up with the Beatles and the Stones, and then when we were kind of just coming to our early teens, it was glam rock and David Bowie. And then at 16 and 17, when we were looking for a bit of rebellion, punk rock came along. And suddenly the fact that we'd always wanted to be, you know, rock stars, who doesn't? But prior to the punk thing happening, we didn't really think we could be. But the punk thing came along, and suddenly it seemed that everything was possible. I met up with Richard and found out that he was an exceptional guitar player. He was only a young lad at the time, and I immediately thought, this is someone special. And we became chums, and we got a band together, and we played together for a few years around the London gig circuit. And then life got in the way, we moved on, we did our different things, and then after a short, brief 30-year hiatus, we bumped into each other again, and Richard had this little thing playing around in the back of his head called Sontag. He played me the music that he had at that point, and I thought it was fantastic, and suddenly we were back working together again, and here we are, here I am talking to you.
Right. In fact, on the subject of music, why don't we play a track?
That's an excellent plan.
Excellent plan.
Superb plan, yes. Let's move forward with that.
Okay. I'm going to start off with Shapeshift. Spaceshifter.
I didn't hear it. I'm sure no one heard it. It's Spaceshifter.
Yeah. Here it is.
Swallowing light on a timeless flight, surfing tidal waves of sound. Sunny tsunamis, dead a kamikaze, riptide run aground. Surrender to the void, the hole is in the soul of the spaceship.
Enjoyed it. I was almost on my feet, hat in the air, you know. It's terribly exciting to hear it. I must admit, it's fantastic. You can almost pretend it's someone else, you know.
Actually, before I ask that question, who else is on that track, and who does what in the band?
Good question. On that track, you will mostly find Richard Sontag, who is the man who wrote the music and plays, well, just about everything on it. The person who is really the other member on there is Milo Venter, who plays the drums, and is a fantastic live drummer, and really gave it an extra kick. But so, you know, Richard's playing keyboards, he's playing guitars, he's doing the bass, he's doing this, he's doing that, the kitchen sink, everything's in there. But also, we had our co-producer, along with Richard, was Youth, who is quite the producer, and he put a lot of himself in there as well, and there's bits and pieces within the production that have perked it up even more than we ever hoped possible, so... So that's us, I guess, on that particular track, that's sort of a four-man team.
Right. Now, the album itself, in the press release, it said space opera. And my mind immediately went back to Hawkwind.
Yeah. That's where a lot of people's minds have gone. And It's funny because when the project was first kind of presented to me, which is as a kind of a piece of music, and we were speaking about this concept of Sontag, and we had a very basic plan of where it was coming from. We were very taken with this guy called Greg Milner, who's written this book called Perfecting Sound Forever. And at the very beginning, he talks about that the Big Bang, the initial Big Bang, those sonic ripples are still reverberating infinitely through space. And this was kind of what we got in our head. And suddenly I'm in space, you know, and I don't know. There was something about the riff of Space Shifter and everything that I like a bit of Hawkwind me, put it like that. When I was 12, I heard Silver Machine. And around about that time, I remember the BBC had a live music show. And it wasn't the Space Ritual album that everybody's familiar with, but it was another show on the Space Ritual tour. And I remember as a 12-year-old sitting there and listening to this and being, you know, entranced by the fact that it was being held together by these words that Michael Moorcock had written. And I'd kind of forgotten all about them. I got really into Space Ritual, I guess, in the early 70s. And then as time went by, it drifted back into the back of my mind. But obviously, this residual memory has come into play in quite, you know, fair amount of what's happened on Sontag. But it kind of wasn't deliberate. It's almost like people told me afterwards that they were hearing this Hawkwind thing, and I suddenly thought, oh my lord, you know, it's there. it's come out in me, whether without my permission even. But I think there are worse things to be, you know, compared to, definitely.
Yeah, and by the way, well, I'm sure you already know this, Dave Brock is, you know, still plowing along with Hawkwind.
He certainly is, and yeah, I spoke with him a couple of years ago, interviewed him, and he's still at it, isn't he? And he still has that enthusiasm, and he goes back so far, Dave. He goes back to trad jazz even, you know, and he's just an incredible guy, isn't he?
Oh, indeed. So, let's talk about some of your other musical influences. It seems to me that Sontag, well, the first time I heard it, I thought there was some Mike Oldfield in there, you know, that had been mated with Pink Floyd. But, yeah, I think I'm going to dump the Mike Oldfield. Keep Pink Floyd, and I see just a bit of Jeff Wayne thrown in, and maybe just a smidgen of the late, great author Douglas Adams. Would I be far off base?
You would not be a million miles away from being very much on base, I'd say. I mean, it's interesting. There are so many influences going into that record because, not to put too fine a point in it, we are not in the first flush of youth. So we have cogitated upon and we have absorbed so much music. And a lot of it has come out in Sontag. It's funny. The Pink Floyd thing has come up a lot, you know, it really has, and you can kind of see why, but it's interesting. I know that Youth, the producer, he very much grew up with Pink Floyd as well, and it was around the time, not too long ago, when Wish You Were Here came out again. I think it slapped some of us around the face and said, remember this, you know, and remember how when you were kind of 15 years old, you first heard Shine On Your Crazy Diamond, and it's astonishing because, funnily enough, Richard was over in the States because, of course, I'm based in London, and Richard's based in New York City, and he wasn't getting this similar influence. It's bizarre that both me and Youth, who went on to co-produce, were listening very much to Wish You Were Here, but I don't think that Richard was. I think it's very much like one of those residual memories lurking in the back of his mind that came out. But there are so many other little bits and pieces on there. But beyond the music, as you say, Douglas Adams, for me, as the guy who wrote the words, I love his style. You know, I love his incredibly inventive, incredibly futuristic, and the word progressive, you know, astonishing. And just with so much humor, but not ridiculous, foolish humor. You know, it's incredible wit. And, he's a very, very sorely missed, if you know what I mean, because it wasn't that long ago that we lost him. But that Hitchhiker's Guide series hit me, I guess, late 70s kind of time, and well, when it hit everybody else. But but that's always been in there as well. I mean, I read those books, 35 years ago, heard the radio series about the same time. And this is the thing. These things just drizzle out of you, whether you want them or not. And hopefully, because there's so much in there, that we've managed to weave them together and made it something more original than just, you know, just the sum of a few parts. I like to think that it's the sum of a myriad parts. It's a massive bouillabaisse of just every kind of ingredient we've ever heard. And the fact that different people are hearing different things in it is absolutely fantastic.
Right. In fact, it was about a week ago that I was bored and
bored. A man with a massive prog record collection. I can't believe you were bored.
You're right. Well, I got onto YouTube and watched the original TV series Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So. It was definitely hot in my mind when I listened to the album. I went, there's shades of Douglas Adams here.
Oh, yeah. Definitely, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was a massive influence. Because the thing is, I'm not a great reader of science fiction. You know, I'm sitting around with my, you know, ballads and all this kind of stuff. I've read bits and pieces, but, you know, really, the stuff that I've really ingested was a very long time ago, and it probably is Moorcock from the Hawkwind era and probably Douglas Adams, you know. But I've read billions of things since, and not every book I've had to colour in. You know, there have been some with big words in them. And, you know, so obviously I've had a lot of sort of literary influences. But, yeah, as you say, you know, you can't get past Douglas Adams.
Well, I'm sorry if this is going to cause you embarrassment, you know.
Bring it on.
Let's do some shameless commercialization.
Superb, yes, go on.
Great. Where can people buy copies of Sontag?
Well, I think probably the best way to do it is to go to the Cherry Red Records website. That's probably the easiest way to get it. But then, of course, you've got the usual outlets, as they say. I've got the Amazon, of course. You've got it's available on eBay and various places. And also, of course, it's on iTunes and various other... Sounds very modern, all this downloading business. But is downloading a progressive rock way of hearing music? This is the question. Should it be vinyl? Should it be CD? Well, where are we with this? But yes, you can get it on both CD and as download from either Amazon or Cherry Red's website or the good old iTunes.
All right. Does Sontag have a website?
That we do not, but we are on the Twitter. So yes, if you Twitter and you find Sontag, Sontag, the all important AA, you will find us on there, and you will find out all there is to know about us. Well, I say that we are a mystery wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in a puzzle, wrapped in a why on earth did they come here in the first place? But yes, that's what we are.
Love the comment. I want to play another track, if that's okay with you.
Well, I wouldn't be offended. Let's put it like that.
Okay. Let's Let's play Aftershock.
After riding the Aftershock cacophony for the best part of a light year that passed in a skull-scraping caterwaul that could have lasted for no more than 5 seconds, or at a stretch, 5 weeks, the great Hot Modulator finally broke free of the vast sonic ripple as it screeched its fearsome planetary requiem towards the edge of the universe. When Sontag's atomic structure eventually stabilized, he turned to face Sarush with a fire blazing behind his perpetual shade. Tearing the lenses from his place, his passionate fury fizzled to dull embers of utter despair as he realized that Sarush had clearly jumped ship during the cacophony.
I really wish I had enough time to play the entire album.
Because, it would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, it tells a story, doesn't it?
Well, that's it. Yeah, there's a linear story that runs all the way through it, which kind of come up with this concept. I mean, it's something called sonic cinema is what we're calling it. Now, it may sound a little bit pretentious, perhaps, maybe, but it's just trying to get this kind of immersive feeling where people are sitting, they're listening, and the way they used to listen to progressive music back in the 70s, you know, they'd sit down, they'd listen to the whole thing. It tells a story. You can close your eyes, you can drift away, you can go inside the music. And funnily enough, you know, while I was listening to that, because I kind of do the narration on that part. I don't do singing on that part. It's easy for me to just fall into a bit of a stupor of fandom for the rest of the band, you know, because I listen to that and I think that Richard and Youth, who co-produced the records, you know, it's some of it so lush and just so it's great. I'm a very big fan of the other part of Sontag, I have to say. So I may get a little gushing, but there's one more thing I've got to say. I missed last time. I was speaking about places where you could find more about our weird journey into space, and I did mention that we're on Twitter. We've also got a Tumblr page as well, where you can find a little more of the artistic side, which Julie Cunner has done. She's done some fantastic artwork, which goes along with it kind of evokes the story of sound being a energy in itself with which you can drive an entire planet. Goodness gracious me. It's going to be like science fiction in here. Please stop me when you think I'm going too far out onto the darkest, furthest wing of the galaxy. But yes, I believe you asked me a question at the start of that, didn't you?
That would be an insignificant part of the western arm of the
spiral wing of the galaxy or something.
Right.
Oh, you see, you're having a Douglas Adams effect on me now. This is very cruel.
Right. Okay, I'll snap you out of it. Let's talk about prog rock.
Yes, let's.
Yeah.
Much maligned, a much maligned genre for a very long time, and bizarrely so. I've never really understood why it's been so. I don't know. It became fashionable to deride it for a very long time, but I think within most of us, or maybe all of us that were given the chance to hear that music and grew up with it in the 70s, it always stays with you, and I think a lot of people have come back to it and discovered why they fell in love with it in the first place. It's great that a lot of these things are being rediscovered as 30th and 35th anniversary remasters and being given the treatment they deserve and being treated as great works of art, you know. And it still carries on. I mean, the prog scene now still carries on. You know, people like Stephen Wilson have brought it into a whole new era. And I think it's more exciting and vibrant than it has been since its commercial heyday, certainly in the mid-70s.
Right. Over the years, I've interviewed many prog rockers. I've done Keith Emerson. I've done Rick Wakeman. But the absolute best quote came from Rick's son, Oliver Wakeman.
Yes.
You're right. He made an interesting observation when I asked him if prog was making a reemergence. And his answer really amused me and surprised me. Prog, he said, has always been and will always be a second-class sport. It's just like cricket.
that can be judged to be maybe a bit cruel, a bit unfortunate, but I think, you know, it's not entirely wrong. You know, it's like, it's It's interesting, you know, there was a time when prog was ubiquitous. You know, you'd go to the front page of the NME in England and, you know, maybe Rolling Stone in the States, and you would find prog bands on the cover. Emerson, Lake and Palmer, they were really hot bands. You know, Yes, Genesis, they were massive. And I don't think we're never ever going to have prog bands that big. You know, I imagine now, I mean, you look at R&B, you look at Lady Gaga, you look at the way things are sold, Justin Bieber. I don't think prog is part of that or really wants to be a part of that. And also, prog music, I think, has come to mean one particular thing, which is, you know, the early 70s. And I think it's very dangerous to set it in stone and keep it in aspic. You know, it needs to go forward. The very name, prog, I think sometimes people forget it's progressive. And in what we're trying to do, we're trying to kind of mix and match styles, as you've touched upon a number of them yourself as you've been listening to the record. But also there's the other side of it. With youth being involved, we brought in a lot of the ambient music, a lot of those kind of textures. And I think it's very much bringing things together with the prog traditions of musicianships and large concepts, just trying to find a way forward. And in that way, be progressive and be, you know, prog in its original meaning. It's the kind of thing we're after. But I do understand what Oliver's saying there, because it can never be commercially that large. You know, it's like it's like trad jazz, you know. But Dave Brock was involved in trad jazz when he was younger, and he'd be the first to admit that his youthful love is now very much a very small, maybe second division sport. But then again, you look at other things that are not at the top of the commercial ladder. You look at classical music, you know, and being thought of as a second division sport, you know, if progressive music can be put in the same bag as classical music, then, you know, that's all right by me, because there's no way that old Ludwig van gets anywhere near the kind of sales that Rihanna gets. But, you know, there's nothing being lost artistically for that differential.
Right. Now, The one thing I did notice on Sontag was obviously you are relying on keyboards, but you're using them in rather strange ways. That there's only one track, Minor Keys of Anguished Weeping. Right. that really uses keyboards in the way that most prog people do. You know, explain.
Ah, well, you see, this is where you should be speaking with my other half, the other half of the Sontag beast, Mr. Sontag himself, our musician. But, I mean, I was there when it was being pieced together in the lab, in a kind of Frankensteinian experiment with our co-producer Youth. And, you see, he comes from a different background himself, Youth. He comes from a lot of ambient music. He's worked with The Orb, people like this. And just to have soundscapes, and especially when you're telling a story, when it's a narrative story, you sometimes don't want the keyboards to be intrusive. You want them there just to add a backdrop and just to add to this, like a soundtrack of a movie. And the idea we spoke of before, the concept of sonic cinema, it's a soundtrack to the narrative, and hopefully it helps evoke what's being, I don't know, maybe half said in the narrative, because I like to think that half of what's being said is in the listener's mind. You know, I tried to pricey the thing down. There were originally more words and more of a story, but then you think that you want to evoke things in people's minds. You need them to close their eyes, listen to the music, listen to the words, and evoke a whole universe of whatever they want in their head. And that's kind of what we want to do. We want to involve the listener. We want to bring ambient music together with progressive music in the same way that maybe Primal Scream brought dance music into the rock arena when they did Screamadelica. It's time when, with the fact that there aren't new technologies coming along with new sounds to really break out, like suddenly if somebody invented a synthesizer or a piano or their electrified guitars, then everything would change overnight. But I think with our technology, we've gone about as far down that route as we can. I think now we can only find interesting pieces to put together in a different way. And I thought, hopefully that's what we're doing, using all our massive, huge head full of influences, both literary and musical, and just giving something for people to find within it what they can. We put in what we can, and hopefully now they can take out of it more than we've even put in.
Let me put a theory to you.
Go. This is good. I love a theory. Yeah, go on.
Now, I've talked to lots and lots of, prog people, and the one thing that always seems to come across is that they're pretty darn smart, and most of them have been classically trained. I don't know if you share this theory.
I know certainly that I've done such a thing for my sins. I did ask Carl Palmer if he started out banging biscuit tins, and I got a very stern frown back from there, telling me his great history of having academics through his family, having studied at the Royal College of Guildhall of this and that, and I learned not to do that again. But yes, as you say, there's a lot of classically trained people within the prog arena. And are you going to ask me? And are you going to ask if we're from that background? I fear you may be.
Well, it's the natural follow-up question.
It is. And I suppose the natural follow-up answer comes thus. My old chum, Richard, he's purely self-taught. I remember when we were growing up, when I first knew Richard, he was in his mid-teens, he was 15, and he was stunning everybody by his interpretations of a lot of the stuff that you'd hear. But I think all I remember Richard really using as classical training was a Beatles songbook, a Beatles chord book, which kind of showed him the way. And then he kind of went off and did what he did. But as far as being classically trained, he's just found his own way, and I always find that's the most interesting way, is to find your own way. And I remember when we were playing together back when, I remember there was a kind of decision made in our band to just do away with blues scales. When Richard was going to be playing a solo, he wasn't going to do the obvious 12-bar bluesing thing, which was very big in England, where we were from at the time, and just find different ways, interesting ways to get from note A to note B. And that's what he did then, and I think that's what he's doing now. He's a guitarist that you won't find anywhere else, if you know what I mean. Because he's self-taught, no one said, do this, do that. He does do things that dazzle me, certainly. And as for myself, I think I can come out and say happily that English literature and English language, I took them to A-level and failed them horrifically. So I didn't go to university, but I did read a lot of music papers when I was younger, and which brought me to where I am now, and I'm doing my day job. But for some reason it's all poured out of my head, and I can only imagine it's residual fragments of all the progressive rock and science fiction that I poured in there when I was very young.
Now, you're based in the UK.
That is it.
Yep, and I'm a prog fan, and it seems to me that most of the prog action seems to be in Poland, of all places.
Poland?
A city called Katowice, and a recording company called Metal Minds.
Metal Mind, I'm very aware of their work, yes, yes.
Right. You know, is Katowice the, re-emergence of prog?
It's interesting. Prog seems to be coming from interesting directions. I mean, it's always had this kind of... It's funny that Oliver should have mentioned cricket, because you have this kind of village green Canterbury birth of prog thing going on, the agrarian fields of Cambridge and, Sid Barrett and everything. But now, rather than that, as you say, Poland, in also Scandinavia, with some really interesting prog music coming from out of Switzerland, from Sweden, from all over the shop. You know, Norway as well. You know, people like Opeth. There's some fascinating music coming out from everywhere. And progressive music as well. We keep calling it prog, I know. And I think maybe some listeners who maybe aren't listening to too much modern prog might think that what we're getting is people who are basically tribute bands to, you know, the Yeses, the Emerson, Lake and Palmers, King Crimson's, Pink Floyd, but they're really not. You know, they're finding their new direction, and it really is truly progressive, the scene out there at the moment. It is exploding. I mean, I feel very privilege that people like to describe us as progressive, and we seem to be being put in with a progressive scene, because it is a very exciting scene to be a part of, and it's very flattering that people think that we should be a part of it.
In fact, the most unique prog band came out of Scandinavia. I never did manage to track them down, but they actually used bagpipes.
Oh, yes, come on. I mean, I'm a man with Scottish roots, Scottish heritage. I can imagine this with my blood would be boiling and singing in my veins, the idea of progressive bagpipes.
I'm serious. I actually listened to it, but I could never track the band down.
No. Well, as I say, progression lives in all kinds of different directions, and you never know. Bagpipes could be the future.
Well, I kind of doubt it.
No, I can't. I don't know if I've got the. I don't know if I've got the enough puff to fill a bag myself. You know.
Right.
Maybe when I was a younger man, I could have filled a tartan bag and kind of twiddled on the drones and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know if I've got that in me. I space operas, perhaps, but a lung full of bagpipe, I don't know if I could manage that.
What sort of response are you hearing about this new CD? Are people liking it?
People seem to be liking it, yeah. People are really kind of hooking into the kind of idea, which is nice. And I think the tracks are very different to one another. There's sort of something in there for everybody. But then again, there's this kind of linear thing that holds it all together. I mean, not everybody loves it, because, of course, if everybody loved it, then it wouldn't be progressive, you know. It's like if there are certain people who clearly aren't going to kind of get it, because it's not their thing. We can't expect everybody to love it. But I think, you know, maybe if we did an absolute carbon copy of Pink Floyd, or an absolute carbon copy of Close to the Edge or something, you know, we would find an immediate audience, and the prog community would be cock-a-hoop with joy. A sort of mixed response, but of course most of it seems to be positive, which is brilliant. I mean, couldn't be more delighted, but it's nice to know that we're giving people something, and it's nice to know that people have still got an appetite for new things. You know, they're looking for new sounds and new styles, because I've always thought that the prog scene is not a museum. It's not people walking around looking at you know, glass cases full of Rick Wakeman's capes. You know, it's something which is a living, breathing thing. So you're a man who clearly would like to see that as well. I mean, I'd love to see Rick Wakeman's cape in a glass case where it belongs. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, there are people throughout the prog scene who really came into this in the first place because of the progression and the way forward into new sounds and new styles, and hopefully we're following on in that tradition, and then they'll hopefully warm to us.
Right. And incidentally, I couldn't give a damn about Wakeman's capes.
No! My word, you surprised me. That the spangles on there, I can only imagine those sequins. I should imagine he sat at home and sewed every one of those on individually by hand, and we should appreciate such attention to detail.
Okay. All right. The reason I decided to try and talk to Rick, and believe you me, it took 6 months.
Really?
Dealing with his people, you know, to actually get hold of him. was all about a really delightful CD titled Amazing Grace.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a grand piano and a reinvention of some classic English hymns.
Right.
Right. And it's just gorgeous.
I bet.
Right. And the DVD version is mind-expanding. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the best videography I've ever seen, not of Rick, but of life itself.
Yeah.
Right. So I eventually get to talk to him, and he hasn't even seen the video.
Oh no! Oh no! That's a little unfortunate. But Rick is a fantastic raconteur, though, isn't he? He's a very amusing man, and I can only imagine that that's a fantastic piece, because when you go and see him, and it's fantastic. You know, set pieces and Journey to the Centre of the Earth is one thing, but when he's just sitting at the piano, he's amazing, because he does have that classical background. And I saw him not that long ago, and he played, you know, Life on Mars, the piano piece he did with David Bowie, you know. And he is a staggeringly talented musician, and but he is a fantastic raconteur. But I'm stunned that he hadn't watched his own video. I love that story. Have you heard the story of, you must have heard the story of when Rick would be playing his Yes solos live, and then when somebody else took a solo, he'd actually sent out for a curry to be delivered to the stage. And so while the other members of the band were off on their flights of fantasy, Rick would be sitting there eating his curry, which the roadie had duly had delivered to him. And I think it's always an amazing insight into the world of Rick.
Indeed. Yeah, I think I have a number of other stories, but maybe for legal reasons, I'll just
draw a veil over those. Yeah.
Right. Ian, I'm looking at the clock.
It's
beaten
us, isn't it?
Right. I've gone way over the amount of studio time I booked, but I just couldn't I couldn't let you go.
Well, that's very nice to know. I'm delighted to that my flapping of my gums have kept you so amused this afternoon. So it's been an absolute delight speaking with you, Simon.
And you, Ian. Very best of luck with Sontag, and please do keep in touch. I'd love to talk to you another time, particularly because of your interest in music in general.
Yes, indeed.
Right, and your magazine.
Oh, yes, that. The day job, yes. That keeps the wolf from the door.
Right. We all need one of those.
Indeed, we do. Well, as I say, it's been fantastic speaking with you, Simon. I'd be very glad to speak with you any other time on any other subject. And the very best of luck to you too, sir.
Okay. All right. We'll talk again. Goodbye.
Bye.